College Park Aviation Museum, located on the grounds of the world's oldest continuously operating airport. This museum documents the triumphs and struggles of the people and technology that made the history of this airport. Section 1. From Kitty Hawk to College Park. On December 17, 1903, two brothers from Ohio literally flew into history, successfully achieving the first controlled flight of a powered airplane. But this was just the beginning for the history of the airplane. The United States government showed little interest in the new technology. That is, until several other nations showed an interest in their invention first. In 1908, the Wrights won a government contract to produce an airplane for the U.S. Army. This new plane, dubbed the Wright Military Flyer, was unveiled in 1908. It was this plane that set out to meet the government's requirements in trials at Fort Myer, located in nearby Arlington, Virginia. During the trials, the plane crashed, killing the passenger and injuring Orville Wright. However, the Wrights rebuilt the aero and came back the following year to complete all of the government's requirements. These included flying at 40 miles per hour, staying airborne for an hour, and having a range of 125 miles, all while carrying two people. The final obligation of the contract was that two officers be taught how to fly the machine. The grounds at Fort Myer were too constricted and not conducive to flying, and the large crowds that the airplane attracted were dangerous for flight training. The government needed a new site for flying. A large, flat field near the Maryland Agricultural College, today the University of Maryland, offered several advantages. It was located next to a thriving town that was accessible by both rail and trolley. It was also more remote than Fort Myer, which both Wilbur and the U.S. military hoped would discourage unwanted visitors. Here was the ideal location to train the Army officers to fly. Section 2, A Day in the Life at College Park, 1909. Moving into a scaled-down replica of the hangar originally built for the Wright Military Flyer, meet Wilbur Wright. Look around at the photographs showing the aeroplane in use and Wilbur's instruction of the military officers he trained, Lieutenants Frank Lamb, Frederick Humphreys, and later Benjamin Floy. Note the catapult and monorail that were used to launch the Wright plane. For the 10 enlisted men at the field, this hangar was also their home. They would have slept on beds like the one before you. On October 8, 1909, Wilbur Wright began flight instruction at the College Park Airfield, taking up his students as passengers on the first day. Lamb and Humphreys soloed for the first time on October 26th, after receiving little more than 3 hours of training. In early November, Wilbur Wright departed the airfield, having fulfilled his contract with the government. The pilots themselves were reassigned within the Army, and the training school moved to Fort Sam Houston in Texas, along with Floy, who never had a chance to solo, and the aero. But the Army had other plans for the airfield, the opening of the government's first Army Aviation School. Section 3, The Army Aviation School, 1911 to 1913. Exiting the hangar, you will find yourself in front of the replica Wright B, also built by Ken Hyde and the Wright Experience. This plane was built for the first Army Aviation School that was set up by the U.S. government in 1911. The Wright B was designed to have instinctive controls. The controls on either side work the elevator, while the center lever controls the rudder and wing warping. Pilots were either right or left-handed depending upon which seat they learned to fly in. The plane itself is made of wood, but painted with a powdered aluminum coating to conceal this fact. This plane was just one of several airplanes purchased by the Army for the military flying school. In addition to the two Wright Bs, there were two single-seat Curtiss Pushers and a Wright Burgess, a Wright B manufactured by the Burgess Wright Company, used to train the officers. The airfield grew to accommodate additional planes, with 7 airplane hangars, a headquarters building, mess tent, and hospital tent. The instructors at the school included Lieutenant Henry Arnold, who had become the commanding general of the Army Air Forces in World War II, and Lieutenant Thomas Milling, later a brigadier general in the Air Force. The Wright instructors were trained to fly at the Wright School in Ohio, and the Curtis instructors were trained at the Curtis School in San Diego. Both groups were sent to College Park to pass on what they had learned to other officers. Above the Wright B hangs replica 1912 Blériot, a plane famous for crossing the English Channel in 1909. In 1912, pilots from the Moissant School in New York, including new pilot Bernetta Miller, demonstrated the plane to Army officials at College Park Airfield. Although the Army rejected the plane for military service, preferring instead the biplanes Army officials were used to, it found its niche in the civilian market. The plane on display was built in the museum's very own restoration shop. During the winters of 1911 and 1912, the school was relocated to Augusta, Georgia to take advantage of the warmer climate. In November of 1912, the Curtis planes were sent to San Diego, California, while the Wright planes returned to Augusta. In mid-1913, the Army decided to discontinue the use of College Park as a training school and establish a permanent military aviation school in San Diego. Section 4, The Best of Both Worlds, Military and Civilian Aviation, 1910 to 1921. Behind the Blériot and the large mural wall is a small gallery highlighting the history of the airfield at the time of the Army Aviation School, including the thriving civilian aviation that began after Wilbur Wright left. The display cases highlight collections associated with some of the most significant achievements and individuals associated with this field. The Army Aviation School saw many aviation firsts in its short life, including the first testing of a bombsight from an airplane in 1911 and the first firing of a machine gun, like the Lewis gun shown here, from an airplane in 1912. Others, such as the first enlisted man to die in a plane crash, served as reminders that we still had much to learn about flight. A friend of Corporal Frank Scott, who died in a crash along with new pilot Lieutenant Lewis Rockwell, recorded Scott's death and burial at Arlington National Cemetery in his diary. Both men had airfields named in their honor. In early 1910, the Rex Smith Aeroplane Company, along with other civilian airplane companies, set up shop at the field. Companies like the National Aviation Company and the Washington Aviation Company provided services for Curtis, Wright, and Blériot aircraft, as well as working on their own designs and projects. In 1918, College Park Airfield was chosen by the United States Post Office Department as the location for the very first postal airmail service route in the nation. Max Miller flew the inaugural flight of the Washington-New York route that took place on August 12, 1918. On the far wall is a scene depicting actor Douglas Fairbanks Sr., who in 1918 sent himself as an airmail package from College Park to promote the fledgling service and to raise money for Liberty Bonds. In 1919, a hangar was built for the growing airmail service, along with a compass rose, a directional feature on the ground that aided pilots in setting their compasses. Both still exist today and are visible in the historic area of the airport, close to the railroad tracks. Airmail service at College Park Airport was discontinued in 1921 with the opening of the New York-California route. In 1926, all airmail operations were given to private businesses to increase efficiency. Section 5, The Airmail Planes, 1918 to 1921. Make your way back to the main gallery and you'll see the meticulously restored Curtis Jenny, on loan from Fort Sill. As one of the most popular Allied fighter planes of World War I, the Jenny was used after the war in the civilian market. Along with other types of planes, such as the de Havilland DH-4, the JN-4H model of the Jenny flew the airmail at this airfield, with the male occupying the front seat and the pilot in the back. This Jenny is an earlier JN-4D model. Airmail pioneer Max Miller stands in front of the Jenny with the airmail scheduling board. Notice the heavy leather jacket and flight cap that protected the pilot from the elements. The goggles protected a pilot's eyes from debris and bugs, as well as the castor oil that continuously spewed from the early airplane engines. The scarf served as both protection and a rag for the early pilot. The exhibit case to the side of the Jenny displays many pictures and personal belongings of the early airmail pilots, as well as examples of the stamps and cancellations used by the Postal Service. On the other side of the plane, take control of the airmail simulator and fly a Jenny into College Park! Hands-on room. Now that you've seen some early examples of airplanes, it's time to learn a little more about what makes them fly. The experimentation room has activities for children and adults of all ages. Here you can see examples of various propellers, wing ribs, and engines that contributed to the history of aviation. Be sure to try out the demonstration of the Bernoulli effect on the far left wall. This is one of the main principles underlying the theory of flight. The idea is the faster the air moves over an object, the less pressure there is pushing on it. Conversely, the slower the air moves, the more pressure is exerted. On an airplane, air moves faster over the top of the wing and slower underneath, creating lift. The "How Does an Airplane Fly?" exhibit demonstrates this principle. In the middle of the back wall, take a look at the museum's very own wind tunnel, modeled after the one the Wright brothers made to test different wing shapes. Give it 2 minutes to warm up, and then use the lever at the top to change the angle of the airfoil, or wing. Notice how the different angles change the flow of air over the wing. While we're on the subject, check out the flow tank along the outer left wall. Use the magnets to see how air would flow over the different shapes inside. Now put everything that you've learned to the test by taking control of our simulator and fly right out of College Park Airport. Whether you like to do arts and crafts or learn about the physics of flight, the experimentation room has it all. Section 7, Up, Up and Away, A New Way to Fly. Directly opposite from the experimentation room is the 1924 Berliner helicopter, the oldest fully intact helicopter in the world, according to the Smithsonian Institution. The father and son team of Emil and Henry Berliner brought their experiments in controlled vertical flight to the airport in 1920. This made perfect sense, as Emil had been a sponsor of the Washington Airplane Company that was at the field until about 1918. On February 23, 1924, this helicopter made what is considered to be the first controlled vertical flight. The helicopter was able to move in a radius of 150 feet at 40 miles per hour, all while staying 15 feet above the ground. The machine was made from the fuselage of a Nieuport 23 biplane. The film footage in front of the helicopter shows the advances that this duo made in their machines from a simple chassis, engine, and propeller to one of their final designs shown here. This early success in vertical flight paved the way for Igor Sikorsky's first practical helicopter in 1940. The display cases around the helicopter showcase the history of Emil Berliner, the well-known inventor of such devices as the telephone mouthpiece and flat disc record. This allowed for high-quality sound to be mass-produced for the first time. Also on display are artifacts from the later aviation companies founded by Henry Berliner, the achievements of his engineering and research corporation, AERCO, and their signature AERCOUP, continued the Berliner legacy at College Park. Section 8, The Golden Age of Aviation. Just past the helicopter is a bandstand portraying what the College Park Airport was like in the 1920s and 1930s during the Golden Age of Aviation. This was a time when the world was utterly fascinated with aviation and aviators. Under the management of George Brinkerhoff, beginning in 1927, the airport held regular air shows that drew many well-known competitors, daredevil pilots, and thousands of spectators. The red monocoque above was a popular plane for the air races that were held here in the 1930s. Brinkerhoff has been said to have taught more people to fly in the Washington area than any other pilot. The yellow Taylor J2 Cub was typical of the planes Brinkerhoff used for pilot training, and was a common sight at most airfields of the day. William Piper bought the Taylor Aircraft Company soon after this plane was introduced, with subsequent models renamed as the Piper Cub. This airplane remains extremely popular today. The gallery behind the large mural features a documentary about the airport. You may also listen to the stories of men and women that flew here and witnessed history in the making. In the display cases are artifacts from the popular air races and exhibitions that were held at College Park Airport during the Brinkerhoff years. From 1926 to 1934, the National Bureau of Standards used the airport to develop radio navigation aids for pilots flying in zero visibility, commonly referred to as blind flying. Hooded biplanes, which would allow pilots to fly using only their instruments, were used to test the new aids. On September 5, 1931, the first blind landing took place at College Park. After the year 1934 saw the first completely blind flight from College Park to Newark Airport in New York, one of the first airports to have radio navigational system installed, the Washington Institute of Technology, WIT, took over these operations in 1934, using the airfield for flight testing for several more years. The Women's Air Service Pilots, or WASPs, played a pivotal role during World War II by flying planes and pilots, training and relieving pilots from non-combat duties so they could fight in the war. Many WASPs trained to fly at College Park Airport as part of the University of Maryland's Civilian Pilot Training Program, or CPTP. Section 9, Feats and Flights. Back in the main gallery, you'll find one of our largest aircraft, a 1939 Boeing Stearman. After the war, this military trainer was used for flight training here at the field and was a popular air show attraction. This specific plane was flown by Gus McLeod over the North Pole in April of 2000, the first open cockpit plane to accomplish this feat. Flying in temperatures as low as 50 degrees below zero and near zero visibility, Gus accomplished what many before him had died trying to accomplish. On his return flight, he developed engine trouble and set down on the ice. Gus later returned to find his plane had drifted some 80 miles toward Norway. The repaired plane made it back to the U.S., making its final flight into the College Park Airport, where Gus had received some of his initial flight training. Next to the Stearman is the Aircoop, a product of Henry Berliner's Engineering and Research Corporation, AERCO, which he founded in 1932. Building a factory in 1937, just across the street from the airport in Riverdale, Berliner used the airport for flight testing the first aircoops. The cutaway aircoop on the ground illustrates the plane's unique control system. All of the control surfaces were directly tied to the control wheel, eliminating the need for rudder pedals. The display case next to the Berliner helicopter illustrates the history of AERCO, which experienced unprecedented growth during World War II, building gun turrets and other aircraft systems for the Defense Department. The genius of engineer Fred Weick, the man that designed the Aircoop, is also a part of this exhibit. Do all of these airplanes have you ready to fly yourself? The blue 1939 Taylorcraft gives you the chance to do just that. Climb into the cockpit of the Imagination Plane and see how it feels to sit inside and work the controls of a real airplane. Section 10, Gaining Altitude. Move upstairs to get a different view of all the planes in the gallery and view one of our temporary exhibits. As you return downstairs at the end of the mezzanine walkway, don't forget to try the Wright B simulator and stop by the prop shop for a souvenir of your visit. For the smaller pilots, there are also pedal planes outside next to the gift shop. Be sure to take our historic walking tour to the other end of the airport. The historic buildings near the railroad tracks include the restored footings of the original 1911 and 1912 Army hangars, as well as the original airmail hangar and compass rose from 1919. Or you can take the outside path next door to the 94th Aero Squadron restaurant, with its six World War II airplane reproductions outside. Thank you for visiting, and please come back soon!